Let me begin immediately by acknowledging the awkwardness of coming forward to preach after that piece in the gospel, the complaint about people who wear long robes and who sit in special places in the synagogue and get the first place at banquets. I mean, it's needless to say, it's a bit awkward. And yet, you know, the gospel is for everybody to hear and take seriously. In my own defense, I at least say, if I'm the last person coming out of church, I shouldn't be the first person in line for supper. At least that much I use to try to establish some kind of consistency. At any rate, the readings are always addressed to us. Queridos hermanos y hermanas, dear friends. If you travel to Jerusalem today and walk through the old city, you eventually arrive at the Temple Mount. On its top is the gorgeous golden roof of what is called the Dome of the Rock. It marks the place venerated by Muslims as the spot where Abraham was finally willing to sacrifice his beloved son Isaac. And beneath that, if you go down far enough, would be the ruins of Solomon's temple. And in between, there are the ruins of the less impressive second temple, built in about 515 B.C. after the Jewish people came back from exile in Babylon. And then on top of that, just under the Dome of the Rock, are the ruins of the renovation, the gorgeous renovation that Herod made. Everything covered with marble. At the time of Jesus, it would have been stunning in its beauty. Covered with marble, as I say, magnificent before being finally destroyed by the Romans in 69 and 70 AD. Go there from anywhere in the city today, you can see this golden roof of the Dome of the Rock. Today, a pilgrim goes down a staircase, having come through the old city within the walls, goes down a staircase into an open space next to the walls, the external walls of the Temple Mount, built by Herod on top of the older, huge, huge ashlar stones that were part of Solomon's temple. You go down the steps, and then as you prepare to turn toward the place where people pray, there's a box set into the stone. And the sign on the box doesn't say for charity or for the poor. It has one word in Hebrew. The word is tzedakah. It means justice. And everyone coming in is invited to put a coin in that poor box, so to say, for justice. Justice not simply in the contemporary sense of paying bills, you know, balancing out the ledger, but in the biblical sense of contributing toward that world in which everyone is properly related to everybody else. That's biblical justice. It's good order. Everyone related wisely and well to everyone else. And so that's where Jesus would have sat. As a matter of fact, where I sat any number of times, simply watching people put money into that slot in the wall. Today, there's still striking contrasts. If you sit there and watch people coming down to pray, it's a place for Jewish folks. Men go to the wall on the left, women on the right. On Friday evening, the eve of the Sabbath, the Hasidic Jewish folks come with fur hats even in summer, gorgeous, solemn clothing to pray. Today's the day for us, given this gospel, to think about the great mystery of generosity. About God's generosity to us, and especially in the things we take for granted, because they're all gifts. But then, not only God's generosity to us, but the invitation to share that same generosity with those around us. Today's, if I called it Poor Widow Sunday, it's also a Sunday of generosity. It's most appropriate that we should do so, it struck me, during this season. Yesterday I did a little quick shopping at neighboring supermarket, and of course the Salvation Army bell ringer was there. I said, "Oh, you're early." He said, "Oh, no, we always start the beginning of November during this season that includes Thanksgiving to Christmas, a time of gratitude, Thanksgiving, and then Christmas generosity." So I found myself thinking about this reading and Poor Widow Sunday. What makes us generous? Sometimes we're generous because of social pressure. United Way had their campaign, and offices, Cousin Center being one of them, is encouraged to somehow enter into competition, to be, you know, to measure up to everybody else and what everyone else is doing. Offices do that, schools do it. And so sometimes we say, well, I'll put in a little more than I might have if nobody was looking. We become generous because of social pressure. That's real. Sometimes it's in response to a need. One of the great blessings, disconcerting blessings of our television is that we see these terrible things that happen across the world immediately, whether it's a devastating earthquake in Turkey or tornadoes somewhere or a home fire locally. It's brought right into our living room. And so often, you know, the goodness of people's heart, we just respond. We want to do something for those poor people. And television is very good at dramatizing the devastation that occurs. Sometimes it's a response to a need. We see a need, we can do that. Sometimes it comes out of a sense of sufficiency. We already have more than we need. I try to have a rule myself that I can only have 6 sweaters. I mean, how many sweaters do I need? But when someone gives me a real nice one at Christmas, then it causes a problem because that means I have to give one away. You know, we have so much. Once, especially in the summer, people, neighbors are coming over with cucumbers and tomatoes, you know, and they say, well, yeah, we're going to give these away because if we don't give them to you, we're going to have to throw them away. You know, that's a little mixed message in there somehow. But, you know, we respond out of sufficiency, superabundance. Or we are generous out of love. That famous story, The Gift of the Magi by O. Henry. It's just a classic. You know, this young couple that loved each other so very much. And they had nothing in terms of material need in the story, The Gift of the Magi. So she had this beautiful hair, blonde hair, that was very long and it was very beautiful. Well, she cut it off and sold it to buy a watch chain for her husband, who then in turn had pawned the watch in order to buy a comb for her. And that very touching story, The Gift of the Magi. We do things out of love. And sometimes we do it out of the joy of giving. Simply the joy of giving. And when that happens, we're like God. We're like God. I remember the shock. The first time it happened, I was on the toll road down in Illinois. I came up, before it was so mechanized, I came up to the station with my 50 cents or whatever it was at that point. And the toll person said, oh, you don't have to pay anything. The person had paid for whoever came next. Well, I thought, what a wonderful gift. And then I did some of that myself afterwards. It'll pay twice. See what happens. Bring a smile to someone's face. It's hard to do that because it's so mechanized now. The whole point is thinking today about the mystery of generosity, about other people's generosity and the way in which we're pulled into it for so many different reasons. And when we are generous, at that point, we're more like God. The medieval definition of goodness is something that's diffusivum sui, something that has to simply give itself away. That's goodness. There was a famous medieval theologian by the name of Duns Scotus, called Scotus because he was Scotch by birth, remarkable theologian, brilliant, taught at Oxford and also at Paris. He died on November 8th, which is today, 1308. That's a long time ago. He was a great Franciscan theologian, and he taught that God redeemed us not to appease any kind of need as if God were angry, and so somehow Christ had to pay a price to placate an angry God. He said, no, that's not the case. Nor is it to compensate, to somehow even the ledger, that God wanted justice, and so some kind of suffering had to recreate justice. Duns Scotus said, no, I don't think so. He said, I think God just wanted to be as close to us as he possibly could. And so entered into our lives, the very fabric of our existence. And I think Christianity has an insight into that great mystery of God. God is good. And we have to be good too. God is generous. We need to be generous too. I remember some years ago always going to St. Gall's at Christmas time. Parish no longer exists, Central City, poorest parish in the whole archdiocese. I would go there Christmas and Easter if I possibly could. It was a wonderful community. One Easter, the total collection was $23. And I remember the pastor admonishing people not to tithe. They did it instinctively. He said, don't do that. You need it for yourself. He would tell them not to do that. Today's what I call Poor Widow Sunday. I think she has a lot to say without saying a word. She certainly talks to me, doesn't say a word. It's a wonderful message.